this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from End Screen Media is with me, come from San Francisco, where he's at TV of Tomorrow conference, right, Colin?
I am. I'm in a really beautiful location in the in San Francisco Bay, overlooking the Golden Gate. And TV of Tomorrow show is taking place, and there's already been some tremendous discussions and presentations done, and one of which we'll be talking about in just a little bit. But before we get there, we're gonna jump on a topic that we've talked about quite a lot in the past on our podcast, and that, of course, is online sports. And NBC had an interesting announcement this morning, and you're going to talk a little bit about that. And I had some comments on sports yesterday. So anyway, tell us what NBC was saying.
Yeah, so NBC Sports kind of furthered their push into OTT subscriptions. Yesterday they announced that they're launching something called Premier League Pass, which is a $50 OTT service that'll offer access to 130 different Premier League games. This is an augment to the 250 matches that are carried on its linear networks and are also available online using TV Everywhere. And this is really the latest of these sports passes that NBC Sports Digital has created in what they call their NBC Sports Gold. So they have other services like Cycling Pass for $40, Pro Motocross Pass for $50, Track and Field Pass for $70, and most recently they launched Rugby Pass for $60. So this is, in effect, their fifth standalone pass. And, you know, it's on its own, it seems it's interesting and intriguing that they're essentially offering cord cutters and cord nevers the ability to access some Premier League matches without having to obviously subscribe to paid TV. That in and of itself, I think, is pretty interesting and shows how they're sort of opening themselves up to new ways of delivering product and new revenue streams. But I thought, Colin, that perhaps even more interesting was whether they're actually even possibly laying some groundwork for how more mainstream sports could be paid for by consumers down the road. And so we've talked, obviously, on this podcast many times about the role that sports plays in the multi-channel bundle. And certainly it's been considered the firewall, if you will, because people who want to watch sports have to subscribe. But I think what we've seen more recently, particularly with ESPN losing over 10 million subscribers over the past few years, all the other sports networks reorganizing themselves in some way, often doing cutbacks and staff count and so forth, is that the pressure is on. And a lot of people do not want to buy that multi-channel bundle that's expensive, full well knowing that a fair portion of their monthly fee is going to cover sports networks that they never watch. And so that, of course, is the beauty of internet economics, which is that people feel that they only pay for that which they actually use, not a bundle of stuff, some of which they have nothing to do with. So we've certainly seen with Netflix and Amazon, Hulu, others create these low-cost subscription services that people feel like they subscribe to and they get exactly what they want. So all of that puts the pressure on sports networks and leagues to innovate what their revenue models are like. And I really like this idea of them creating these sort of relatively low-cost passes for fans to be able to get over-the-top access. So you may still really be into Premier League, but you don't want to pay a monthly multi-channel fee that's, you know, includes a lot of stuff that you don't care about. So now NBC comes along with something that, you know, for $50, you get access to 130 matches and you can still follow the action. It also, I think, makes me wonder about, for NBC in particular, what might come next. And the one that I think is really ripe for this sort of a pass is, and I've thought this for a while, is an Olympics pass. So think about what NBC has been doing now for years in terms of making more and more of the Olympics programming fully available online and through connected TVs and so forth. But it's basically all been in a TV Everywhere environment. So they're clearly out there already capturing all of these Olympic sports. They've just only been making them available to people who obviously subscribe to pay TV. And you can easily imagine them just flipping a switch in mass and for, whatever it might be, $150 for the 2.5 or 3 weeks that the Olympics runs, you would be able to access all of the coverage that they have through all of the different devices that you have without having to subscribe to pay TV at all. And that would extend Olympic viewing far beyond those who currently subscribe. And I think would be, a really nice augment for the way that NBC monetizes the very expensive rights fee, obviously, that it extends to get access to the Olympics in the first place. So the next one is 2018 Winter Olympics. We have not heard anything from NBC yet on the concept of an Olympics pass, but I really like that, and it would not surprise me at all if they did that, nor would it surprise me if we saw more and more of these kind of temporary passes released and introduced going forward, because the model just makes a lot of sense from all the different perspectives. So I thought that was pretty cool, Colin. NBC clearly is having some success with these passes. They wouldn't be continuing to launch them if they weren't. So I think it's something worth keeping a close eye on.
I completely agree, Will. I think this makes a lot of sense for NBC to do this at this time. They actually saw a decline in the audience for Premier League last year. This is they've been covering it for a couple of years now, and they saw 18% fall from last season. So I think delivering this service online is a great way to sort of get this back under the noses of millennials, particularly, who are increasingly watching online, well, as the rest of us are. So I think this is a really good option for them. I think it's well priced too. $50 seems pretty reasonable for the entire season. The one question I have, I got very excited when I saw this because I'm a Premier League fan myself, and I wondered if I could actually get rid of pay television completely. That it does not cover all the games. There are still going to be 200 odd games that'll be on pay television. So I'm not quite sure how that will work out, but we'll have to see what they're carrying on this service to really understand. I think if you can get rid of your pay TV subscription and still stay well connected with the Premier League. So I'm very hopeful that that's the case, because I got to tell you, Will, NBC Sports, which is where many of the games are covered, is typically on one of the upper tiers of the pay TV service tiers, and that keeps you paying a very high amount. For example, my bill is typically $90 with Dish, and one of the reasons is Premier League. So this might at least help me lower that bill somewhat. There's
Yeah,
enough. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I thought even beyond the cost issue, which is obviously self-evident, but just the whole user experience, I think, is also interesting to think about. Like the way that Netflix and others have trained us to go into an individual app in order to access programming. And so rather than like flipping channels and trying to figure out, as you say, the upper reaches, what channel that Premier League broadcast is on, the idea that you've got a specific app and that's where in order to gain access to the matches, that you're going to go. And it's a much cleaner, more straightforward user experience, removes some of the friction. So I think there's something to be said even beyond the cost savings, just for the access and the usability advantages here.
Again, and I completely agree with that, Will. And actually, you bring up something that I think is a very interesting topic. I noted that Sky in the UK is actually completely revamping the way they do their sports networks. They too saw a huge drop, a 10% season over season drop in viewing of Premier League in the UK, which is terrible news, because that's of course the primary sport there. But get this, it's 31% down since 2011-2012 season. So there's a massive, massive drop there. So they're doing two things. Sky are doing two things that I think are really important. Number one is they're simplifying and changing their channels, so that they're really themed channels, and one of those will be themed around Premier League. But the other, and I think much more important thing that they're doing, is they're basically lowering the bar that the financial bar that people have to pay to actually watch the games. Because right now, when you subscribe to Sky and you want to watch Premier League and you want to get as many of the games as possible, the least you will pay extra is for the cheapest Sky Sports package, which is nearly £50 or $65 a month. So what they're doing is they're breaking out these theme channels, and I think what they're basically going to do is allow you to subscribe to just a Premier League package for £18 a month, I think is what they're planning on charging for that. So that, I think, is really important. And by the way, I think it's something that the NFL and the operators here in the States should be paying a lot of attention to because, of course, there's been a huge drop in NFL viewership, and that is primarily focused in the younger folks. So in the 18 to 34-year-old age group, peak game viewing occurred in 2011 with 1.3 million viewers per game. And this season's games, they're only receiving a 3 million audience on average. So that's 1.3 million down. So I really think that the NFL and pay TV operators should be looking very closely at what Sky is doing and how they're revamping their approach to the delivery of Premier League in the UK, and maybe thinking about doing something similar here in the States to basically re-engage millennials in sports watching, because you know there's a lot of competition out here. Are you going to sit through a 3-hour football game with tons of ads and have to pay a high premium to get the game, or are you going to spend that 3 hours watching no ads on Netflix with a favorite show? And for a lot of millennials, that's a real choice that they're making every day, and the choice they're making is to go with Netflix or HBO Now or something like that and get that uninterrupted experience.
Yeah, and the other thing, of course, to keep in mind is that the scores are available everywhere. So it's not like if you're not in the old days, if you weren't watching the game, you had no idea what the score was. Now the scores are everywhere. So you could, in fact, be doing something else while also monitoring how the game is progressing. So the bar is ever higher. I definitely agree with you. And I mean, no question, Colin, I think all sports, not just NFL, but I think all sports have to be looking hard at how they maintain fan engagement in an era where people are, you know, increasingly cutting the cord and just are not even paying attention or not even in the universe of that multi-channel bundle.
That's something that actually I'm expecting going forward. And I think it's highly likely in five to 10 years and I would actually say it's more likely in 5 than 10 years, that many of us, one of the services that we have will be our favorite sports package that's provided to us over the top directly by the league or by some licensing group like NBC, and they're giving it to us directly, and we can indulge in it as much as we like. And that's one of the things that I really love about this idea of theme channels with Sky and NBC providing me with an app, is that when I go to that place, I am completely immersed in the topic, the sport, the interest that I have. So I'm really pleased to see it, and I think it's a great move.
Well, let's switch gears, Colin. Excuse me. As you said earlier, you are at the TVOT conference. Sorry, I'm losing my voice here for a second. At the TVOT conference in San Francisco, and you heard an interesting speaker earlier today from Sinclair about ATSC 3.0. That's not a subject that I've admittedly paid too careful attention to. You've paid more attention than I, and you were very impressed with what the speaker said could have serious implications somewhere down the road, not necessarily short term, but somewhere down the road. And so you wanted to share some of your observations about that talk.
Yeah, it was a very exciting presentation or discussion with Chris Ripley, who is President and Chief Executive Officer of Sinclair Broadcast Group. And what he did, Will, was he gave the strongest endorsement yet for ATSC 3.0, and I'll talk a little bit about that in just a second, of any broadcaster, anybody with local channels. And that, for me, has been the missing ingredient here with ATSC 3.0. And I think, actually, one of the reasons why the industry hasn't been paying more attention to it, and that is the broadcasters themselves have not come out and strongly endorsed it and said they're going to support it. Well, boy, did that change this morning with Chris Ripley's presentation or discussion. The picture he painted, Will, was nothing short of revolutionary, and I want to talk about what he's planning on doing. Now Sinclair is actually in the process of expanding. They are looking to buy Tribune Group, and today they have channels that cover about 39% of the country. So that's unduplicated footprint. When they get Tribune, they will have 72%. So what that means is that their channels can reach 72% of the population of the US. So that's as close to a national broadcast footprint as you could possibly get. Now, why is that such a big deal? Well, it's such a big deal because Mr. Ripley made such a strong endorsement of ATSC 3.0. And basically what he's planning on doing is not just increasing his coverage in the country. He's planning on a massive increase in the infrastructure and the delivery of broadcast channels. Right now, he says they have between 5 to 6 channels per market. He says within 5 years, they are going to expand that to 20 channels per market. That's a huge expansion. Now, why is he saying he's doing that? Well, he believes that ATSC 3.0 gives him a fabric on which he can establish a completely new distribution system, completely separate to pay television, but which gives him a lot of features allowing him to monetize in many different ways. Now, why is that? Well, ATSC 3.0, there's a couple of features that he's really looking to here that make it just a little bit different. First of all, it's really optimized for mobility and the small antennas that you will find in smartphones. And so what this means is that he can deliver a broadcast signal to a smartphone when ATSC 3 rolls out. And of course, when it rolls out, it will be using the standard broadcast towers that are already in existence. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that ATSC 3.0 embeds this broadcast in IP. So it's an internet protocol broadcast. That might sound a strange animal to you, but the reason it's important is because those 20 channels per market will be blending IP, this ATSC 3.0 broadcast, with on-demand stuff coming in over the internet and over your mobile web connections. And the apps can blend these completely seamlessly. So you just won't know exactly where you're getting the video from. Maybe it's coming from an ATSC 3 broadcast. Maybe it's coming from on-demand, online. But blending these two together allows him to take this broadcast fabric and overlay on it now everything he needs to be able to do things like targeted advertising, subscriptions, customer management. He can blend this all now with the internet part and the broadcast part. And so it gives him just such a flexible platform on which to launch this content. So this is the thing that was really exciting for me. It allows Sinclair to launch brand new services, which they could never have done before, and layer on those in on-demand content. So he talked about, for example, they're going to launch a sports network. And this sports network likely will be carried in all of the markets that Sinclair is active in. So that's 72% of the country. You'll be able to get this free ad-supported channel which covers college sports and other sports, all ad-supported. But you will be able to go seamlessly from this channel to a premium channel which you would subscribe to, and that may be coming to you either broadcast or you might be watching on-demand assets over the internet. So this sort of thing was just not possible before. And now Sinclair is talking about doing this and reaching 72% of the country with it. And he's talking actually about expanding to be able to reach 100%. So to me, this sounded pretty revolutionary. We've not heard any broadcast group talk like this before. And it was a very, very exciting vision. At least for me, I was very excited by what I heard from him.
So, Colin, let me jump in because, again, I will confess that I have not followed this that carefully. But, you know, one thing that I do feel like I've understood about ATSC's limitation is that you've got to have the tuners or the receivers in the end devices, and those are not yet anywhere. So basically, there are, you know, no deployed handsets, smartphones, tablets, PCs, whatever, that would be able to receive an ATSC signal as of today. Is that still the case? And if so, what's the plan? How did he describe that?
Yes, that is indeed still the case, Will. And in fact, there are no televisions that do ATSC 3.0 either. The cycle that will take to replace those also takes, you know, it takes a couple of years in the case of handsets. It takes a bit longer with the televisions. So this, I think, is a longer term vision. So we are talking 5 to 10 years, I think, out before they can actually deliver on this vision. But that said, they are partnering now with handset manufacturers and with chipset manufacturers to make sure those chipsets get built and get added into the handsets. The great thing is that ATSC 3.0 is already getting a test drive in countries like South Korea, which has made a strong commitment to it and is rolling it out now. So it should be pretty robust. And the thing that really, I think, differentiates it is this mobile focus. So it should work in your handset, it should work in your car. And with such blanket coverage of the country, it means that it's something that I think should show value. Even, you know, it's very, very difficult to predict where we're going to be in 5 years. Sometimes it feels like it's difficult 5 minutes from now. But I think this really will be a platform, if the broadcasters stand behind it, that will be something that they can innovate on for decades after that. So yes, it'll take a while to roll out. But I'm, you know, listening to him talk with this vision, I'm a lot more optimistic now that it can happen than I think I would have been without this strong support.
Yeah, well, it sounds pretty interesting. I tend not to think too far out, like 5 to 10 years. That's just my nature to be a little more short-term oriented. And it sounds like this, as you said, it's a sort of a 5 to 10 year plan.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, we have 5G going on in the background. That rollout is also happening. But you know, the great thing is that ATSC 3.0 and 5G, I think, are pretty complementary. So you know, it's all shoulders to the wheel, I think, now to try and see if we can get ATSC 3.0 actually rolled out and working.
All right, Colin. Well, sounds like we'll want to keep paying attention to that. And sounds like Sinclair is definitely putting a stake in the ground. And we're going to get back to the TVOT conference, right?
Indeed, and lots of interesting stuff to go. I'll be talking ATSC 3.0 tomorrow with Sam Metheny, who's a CTO at the NAB. So maybe I'll have some more for our listeners next week.
Okay, sounds great, Colin. So thanks for chiming in there from TVOT, and get back to your action. Thanks, everybody, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News and Screen Media Podcast, and we'll see you all again next week.